Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
The National Center for Science Education is making news with reports on science education policy and claims about the teaching of evolution. I'm Robert Crowther with the Center for Science and Culture, and joining me for this episode of ID the Future is Sarah Chaffee, Discovery Institute's Program Officer for Education and Public Policy. Welcome, Sarah.
Glad to be here.
We're going to be talking a little bit about your area of expertise, science education and public policy, because recently Evolution News and Science Today has been covering newly published reports and articles by the National Center for Science Education, the NCSE. And regular listeners and those familiar with the overall debate over how to teach the theory of evolution know about the NCSE and how dogmatic they are in defending a very Darwin-only approach to teaching evolution. Anyhow, they've got new research that they are publicizing specifically in an article in Nature magazine and then some other journals as well, mostly by the NCSE's director, Ann Reed. That coverage has noted quite a few problems with the recent surveys the NCSE has done, such as their claims about numbers of teachers who say intelligent design is a valid scientific alternative to Darwinian evolution. They claim there's been a decrease of support among teachers, but the data set shows overall teacher instruction about intelligent design has stayed virtually the same since 2007. They also have some claims regarding a drop in the numbers of teachers teaching the controversy. Neither does that seem to stand up to scrutiny. We will get to all of that and more in just a moment. But as always, we have to let people know exactly what Discovery's actual position about teaching evolution, about science education policy is. And Sarah, you're the best person to outline that for us. Can you explain the Institute's education policy briefly?
Well, many people are actually surprised by learning our policy. And that is that we advocate for teaching the strengths and weaknesses of evolution in the science classroom. We do not advocate pushing intelligent design into the curriculum, even though we are in the home of the intelligent design movement. There are multiple reasons for that. One of them is that many teachers don't know how to present intelligent design correctly, but also that it tends to become a political football instead of a productive discussion, given the sensitivity of classroom teaching. Another part about this is that there's so much literature in the scientific journals regarding controversies around evolution, controversies over natural selection and random mutation, that are great ways to introduce students to scientific inquiry. So if you bring them materials from the recent Royal Society conference a few years ago, debating how biological diversity came to be, it's a great way to engage your high schoolers in really figuring out, okay, how do scientists do science and what evidence is there regarding biological diversity, regarding the origin of life? So we advocate for raising questions instead of having students regurgitate dogmatic answers.
So it sort of sounds like something we've said before, which is that we want to teach more about evolution, not less, as is often claimed, or that we want to get rid of the teaching of evolution or anything like that. Rather, we want to teach about all of the questions about evolution, the evidence that supports it, and the evidence that challenges it. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So we want to teach the scientific controversy, especially focusing on doubts about the adequacy of the mechanism of natural selection and random mutation to build the adaptive complexity of life.
That seems like a good approach pedagogically and just logically as well. So the NCSE, though, has a different view. They're very dogmatic about their approach to science education in that they don't think students should be presented with any challenges or anything like that. That comes through pretty clearly in these reports and articles that they have. And in those, they are employing some kind of different definitions of things throughout their surveys. They definitely have some different definitions of evolution, don't they?
Yeah. So, you know, at times it's unclear what exactly the NCSA means by the term evolution. Evolution can be used to mean change over time. It can be used to mean common ancestry, that all life is related in Darwin's Tree of Life, or it can be used to mean that natural selection acting on random mutations is the primary driver of biological diversity. So most people agree with the first, that change happens over time. Some people, such as Michael Behe and several of Discovery Institute's fellows, agree with common ancestry. And then the third one, natural selection acting on random mutations as the primary driver of biological diversity, that is where more controversy develops.
And it's not just the definition of evolution. They have some interesting ways that they define teachers. They define a teacher who is an advocate of evolution, or how they define someone who teaches evolution as settled science. How do they do those definitions?
Right. So this gets interesting. I will read to you how they define a teacher who is an advocate of evolution. So this teacher, there's three specific things. First, the teacher agrees with the statement, when I teach evolution, including answering student questions, I emphasize the broad consensus that evolution is a fact, even as scientists disagree about the specific mechanisms through which evolution occurred. The second statement about these advocates of evolution is they teach evolution as the unifying theme for the content of the course. And thirdly, they disagree that an excellent general biology course could make no mention of Darwin or evolutionary theory. So this is, as you can see, somewhat convoluted and isn't clear at all about necessarily what evolution means.
It sounds to me like teachers who may be presenting or teaching the controversy or presenting some of the questions about Darwinian evolution could certainly agree with much, if not all, of those statements, and yet they would be considered an advocate of evolution.
Right. I mean, teachers could doubt the mechanisms of evolution. You know, they could acknowledge that scientists disagree about the specific mechanisms through which evolution occurred, as that statement says. And, you know, that's what you see in the scientific literature. And it's why a number of scientists have problems with evolution, and why many of scientists affiliated with Discovery Institute want the controversy to be taught.
So the way that they're using their definitions of advocate of evolution and teaching settled science seems to be inclusive of teachers who are actually teaching the controversy. So claiming that more teachers are teaching evolution kind of dogmatically and that fewer teachers are presenting the challenges and questions is misrepresentative of the actual current reality in the classroom, it sounds
like. Right. So I'd like to just address a couple of other parts of this statement. So most high school biology teachers, good high school biology teachers, are going to follow the curriculum. And that subpoint B is teaching evolution as the unifying theme for the content of the course is usually specified by the curriculum that the school district has laid out. So that's going to happen no matter whether a teacher is teaching the scientific strengths and weaknesses of evolution or not. And then everyone's going to be teaching evolution, of course, because that's part of the curriculum. So I think what the NCSE has done here is made a statement that sounds so good that everyone can agree with it, but doesn't necessarily give any sort of new information on what teachers are doing.
So the teachers who did participate in this survey, they had to self-report on the survey. How are Darwin-doubting teachers likely to respond when they see a survey like this? Are they more likely to be over or underrepresented among all of the responders?
You know, I think that they're likely to be underrepresented for the reason that Darwin-doubting teachers, you know, look up this survey, may not have any particular reason to participate. The NCSE is a dogmatic organization. And I know that, you know, if I were a biology teacher looking this up and I saw, okay, you know, this is an organization I don't necessarily agree with, why would I take time to fill out this whole survey and participate in this process? This is unlikely to be something that has value. So I think that they're probably underrepresented.
Yeah, I think that is probably correct. I mean, the stories over the past couple of decades, at least, about teachers who have been reprimanded, removed from classrooms, had their curriculum changed, and so on, because they were challenging the Darwin-only approach by presenting both strengths and weaknesses of the theory, have been in trouble, those have been widespread. We know that the NCSE itself and the ACLU and other, you know, the Freedom From Religion Foundation and so on, these groups challenge these teachers and attack them often and cause a lot of strife and stress for them in the classroom. Why would any teacher want to say, yeah, I'm, you know, have these doubts about Darwin, so to speak? I doubt they would be involved in such a study. So it just does seem that way.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, teachers are aware that this dogmatic view is being pushed and that, you know, publications like this are used to push it. So I think teachers who want to teach the controversy don't want to be part of, you know, snuffing out opening exploration of the scientific strengths and weaknesses. And that's what these kind of media reports tend to do.
So if a teacher is teaching the controversy, they're teaching the strengths and weaknesses of evolution, and they can still be classified, according to the NCSE's reporting, as an quote unquote advocate of evolution and teaching settled science, then is this survey really doing a good job of investigating the extent to which Darwin is being questioned in the classroom?
No. This is trying to reinforce the spin that virtually no one is questioning the evidence for Darwinian evolution who isn't, you know, on the fringe. But that's simply not the case.
Yeah, it seems like the survey methodology seems likely that the actual percentage of Darwin-doubting teachers is higher than what they're suggesting. And the way the survey is set up, I can't really tell you how many students are taught both strengths and weaknesses or are taught a more dogmatic thing, which is kind of too bad because this survey is getting a lot of coverage. Obviously, Nature magazine, one of the biggest journals in the world, and others are talking about it. And it's mostly just spin, really, coming from the NCSE.
Mm-hmm. So the NCSE's recent push through this Nature article and the accompanying peer-reviewed journal article on which it reports is, you know, a good example of the all-too-common Darwinist spin that few are questioning the scientific evidence. In order to learn more about this issue, I would encourage you to go to evolutionnews.org, search NCSE. We've had 4 articles regarding this issue in the past couple of weeks.
Thank you, Sarah, for coming on ID the Future today and helping to explain some of the latest issues in science education policy.
Thank you, Rob.
So always a popular topic. As Sarah said, there are quite a few recent articles about science education and academic freedom in the NCSE. You can just search NCSE at evolutionnews.org. You'll find quite a bit of interesting reading about this and other related education issues. For the CSC in Seattle, I'm Robert Crowther. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.